You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Did you see the Mellinger column?
I did not. I saw the headline for it, but I wasn't able to read it today.
The one about revenue.
What did he say?
Apparently, when they host a playoff game, it's basically $1 million clean, free revenue for them.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's just...
I'll take that.
Yeah. And, you know, that's just hosting the game. That's not... I don't think that really counts, like, outside merchandise sales or anything else.
Right.
It's just what they do that day. Bam, $1 million. And as he points out, because they didn't budget it, then it, you know, it's just extra. You know, it's just like, okay.
It's just straight profit.
Yeah.
And they've been like Rally House and all that stuff. I mean, they've just been printing money with all this playoff gear.
Oh yeah. They got like $70 for me on that stuff alone. So.
Oh yeah. I mean, they're selling the playoff hats for freaking $37 a piece. Which,
yeah. And I have one. It's ridiculous. It's sitting on my
exactly. I have one
autographed
on my
basketball. It's like, heck yeah, yes, I'm getting that.
Absolutely. so yeah, I mean they've got to be making just a ton of money off all this stuff, which good for them. I mean, hopefully they can pump it back into the team in one shape or form or another. But
that's the idea.
That is the idea.
So I, you know,
okay.
It's
so we can talk about that, and
I think we kind of just
we can lead with we did just talk about that.
Yeah,
yes,
I
guess we can just cut that out and put it at the end if we wanted. But
heck, just tell him who we are, who sponsors us, and we'll just go.
All right, and welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. I, of course, am your host, Jeff Herr, and with me is the still staying dry, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing this evening?
You're right. I'm still dry. I'm sitting at the kitchen table. I was supposed to be at a baseball game tonight, but instead I have a pot of chili on the stove and beer at my side, and we're going to talk a little baseball, so pretty good.
Yes, I was also supposed to be there, and the reason that it's relevant that Michael Engel is dry is because the game was rained out, and it'll be postponed until tomorrow. By the way, we're recording this on Monday. Crap, I don't even know what the date is today. It's Monday, October
the 13th. Yep.
Yes, Monday, October 13th. So that game is postponed. Everything is just pushed back a day. And the way I heard it termed, my dad was telling me that they, when you buy a ticket, you're buying a ticket to game one in Kansas City, which is actually game three. So it's not something where it's good for a later date or whatever. The first game that is played in Kansas City in this playoff series, if you have a ticket to that game, that's where you get. And most of you, by the time you listen to this, will probably know that if you're going to the game. If not, it's probably not going to matter either way. But
you'll find out one way or another.
Yes. A lot to talk about here. Last time we had a show, we were talking with Kevin Scobie as our guest, talking about the Royals matchups against the Angels and how it was actually pretty favorable, and at least especially from a running standpoint, because neither catcher that the Angels had was that great of a throwing catcher. And then talking about how, if they were to move forward, how they matched up against the Tigers and the Orioles. But just to recap first, as most of you undoubtedly know, if you listen to this show, the Royals swept the Angels, the best team in baseball with the best record in baseball, and the Royals just took it to them. So here we are now, and then not only were they able to do that, but now they're up 2-0 on Baltimore, the second best team in the American League, arguably, and by record they were second best team, but arguably actually the second best, but the Royals went to Baltimore, where the Orioles had not lost two in a row since late June, and took it to them 2-0. So the Royals have won 6 straight postseason games, and counting their run to the 1985 World Series, that's now 9 straight, with a small little gap of about 28 years in between wins there. But hey, you know, a streak is a streak. So it's, I mean, to start off the show, I mean, just some thoughts, Michael Engel, try and put this into as much perspective as we can here.
Well, I don't even know. I mean, last time we were talking,
we don't have any perspective, I guess, to put this to.
Yeah, so I don't know. You know, just seeing that they were going to be against the Angels, I mean, it seemed like it was winnable because their pitching wasn't great. Like, the Angels' pitching wasn't great. The Royals, better pitching staff and, you know, everything all considered. It seemed like they could do something, but the Angels had the best record for a reason. And it's because they had, you know, Albert Pujols had a reasonable year, a close to Pujols kind of year. Mike Trout was going to be the MVP. Howie Kendrick was good all year. You know, all kinds of different things went right for him. And the Royals went in and they just took it to him. I mean, they didn't, like, dominate, but the Angels didn't score hardly at all. They scored, what, like 6 runs all series, you know, in over 3 games?
Yeah,
so, and granted, I mean, 4 of those were on home runs, but those were all solo home runs. So they really never got anything going. Mike Trout got 1 hit. I think Albert Pujols got 1 or 2 hits. And that was it. And the Royals managed to hang in there, and they got good starting pitching. Jordano Ventura had a great start. James Shields had a pretty good start. Jason Vargas had a surprisingly good start, considering how his September had gone. And then you get to the bullpen, and the bullpen was untouchable, basically. Like, nobody in the bullpen gave up a run except for, ironically, Wade Davis, which I think even that was, like, I think that was in the clincher in Kansas City, where it was 8-2 going into his inning, and it was 8-3 after.
Yes.
And really, you know, the first 2 games were, you know, late inning, extra inning games. Strangely enough, Mike Moustakas hits a home run to win the first game. Eric Hosmer hits a home run to win the second game, from a team that was last in home runs. And yeah, I mean, just crazy.
Like, not even last, like dead last.
Dead last. And so, yeah, I mean, it's like the game against Oakland really woke him up. You know, also, I mean, there's also sample size. You know, you're talking about basically, you know, that Oakland game, that's a 1-game season. The Angels, that's a 3-5 game season right now. And with Baltimore, it's a 4-7 game season. So a lot of things can go crazy in that situation. And the Royals right now are they're hitting like crazy. Like, they're hitting with power. They're drawing walks. They're doing everything we've wanted them to do all year long. And they're doing it now in October. And it's paying off big time. Because those are the things that are getting them over the hump. That's how they're winning these close games. They've homered in every game except for the wild card game. So I don't know. And you know, that Angels series in particular, they dominate pitching and defense wise. I mean, there was that one weird game where Lorenzo Cain made a couple of high catches and Nori Aoki made some circus catches that just who knows how he made them. And that's kind of what it's been. That's the formula. They've been able to apply their regular formula of pitching and defense, and they're adding home run and plate patience now. And so that makes them, if they keep that up, and we've seen through 2 games in Baltimore that they've been able to keep that up. If that continues, by God, if they're not the favorites to win this whole dang thing.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable what they've been able to accomplish. And to me, I've kind of had this weird feeling where when I watch the Royals play, it's just like you said, that all the things that we, you know, especially on the show, have been harping on them to try and do all year, have more patience at the page, but more patience at the plate, have nice. A better approach, have better approach, all that kind of stuff. Those things that we've been crying for, they've been doing in the postseason. And it's almost like they've been so focused on, just as an organization, on the postseason and making all the right decisions related to who's on the roster, who's playing what position, starting lineups, who's pitching where, how they're using the bullpen and everything like that. It's almost like they've kind of just forgot about trying to emphasize their plate approach and just kind of haven't really, you know, have kind of backed off, and everybody just looks much more relaxed because of it up at the plate, you know, except for, you know, a couple exceptions. Like Alex Gordon has had a few big hits, but for the most part, I mean, he maybe has had two of the biggest hits in the playoffs.
Yeah,
for the team, arguably.
He's also struck out nine times.
Top five. But exactly, he's been, other than that, he's been looking pretty awful up there. And Salvador Perez, he also has had a big hit, won that wild card game with a walk-off double. But, I mean, he as well has just looked just flailing at crap up there. Literally crap, stuff that's just, that shouldn't even have any business being a pitch, let alone something he swings at. He's up there hacking away at it. So, I mean, it's not perfect, but the Eric Hosmers and Mike Moustakas and Alcides Escobars of the world, who we've been wanting to be better in those areas, have looked a lot better in that way in the postseason, and it's quite remarkable what they've been able to accomplish. And I mean, who knew? And exactly what you said, you know, the wild card game, one game season, and the 3-5 game season, and against the division series, and you know, we can go back to midway through 2013 when the Royals started to heat up and they were in the playoff race. You can go back and listen to some of the shows, and we talked about it. We talked about exactly this scenario playing out, you know, not to toot our own horn or anything, but, you know, we talked about the Royals being not built for the regular season, but built for the postseason. And we talked about it a little bit last week with Scobie, when he was on, this kind of just shifting things in the margins that, you know, kind of pick you up a little bit and put you in a better position to win. And you talk about the speed of the Royals and the defense and everything. And over the course of a year, you know, defensive value doesn't outweigh the ability to get on base and score runs and things like that. But in the postseason, when it's just a few games and, you know, it's 5-2, and Albert Pujols hits a blooper into center field with two men on base and only one out. You know, normally when that drops for a hit, then they've got the bases loaded and they're in a much better position. But when you've got Lorenzo Cain patrolling center field and he makes an unbelievable catch and then comes right back and makes another unbelievable catch right after that and basically saves the inning and the game. I mean, that could have easily been two runs for the Angels in that sequence there, but Lorenzo Cain makes both catches, and they get out of the inning, and they end up winning 8-3. So, I mean, you know, that's something where you can't depend on that over an entire season, but when you're in the playoffs, and hey, guess what? That was the game to clinch the series. Well, you know, the Angels don't get another shot at it. The Royals took it away from them, so it's entirely fascinating to see, you know, just something that was just kind of a theory, but how it's actually playing out. Because then you can see it again. You saw it against the Angels, and you're starting to see it a little bit against the Orioles too. The way the Royals play baseball makes people uncomfortable, especially in the postseason when you're probably already keyed up a little bit. But you could definitely see it in the Angels series. Their body language was bad. They didn't look excited. They looked a little jittered. And they just, the way they were playing, the Royals had them out of their comfort zone, which being in their comfort zone was how they became the best team in baseball. So it's, I mean, for me, it's just been incredibly compelling to watch this team, not only because all the extra inning games and everything, but just how they're doing it is so, you know, we haven't seen it in so long, and it's so unusual to see. And it's hell if it ain't fun to watch.
It really is. And I think back to like when we talked to Sam Mellinger earlier, and you know, just thinking and watching the games in August and into September, you know, there was kind of a looseness in July and August as they were kind of chasing Detroit. You know, they were the, you know, young team, nothing to lose. They've just got to, you know, go out there. The pressure's on Detroit to hold them off. And then you kind of saw when they did reach first place, they held it for, you know, a month. But it did seem like, you know, early September, they had all those defensive problems. Starting pitching kind of was off and on. They kind of went through another lull at the plate. It kind of seemed like the pressure was getting to them. They were getting tired, things like that. There is a difference when you can go out there and be loose and be the team that just wants to go out. And, you know, it's like they don't even know they're supposed to be the underdogs. And they just go out there, and you look at them. Sal Perez every day is putting out a new Instagram video where he's messing with Lorenzo Cain, and Gerard Dyson is like 5'10" of swagger, just purely like feeding everything on this team. And you know, then you've got guys like Shields and Guthrie and Duffy who just unwavering confidence, and it's crazy to see. And you know, we're a little more statistically inclined, but you can't just. You can't just dismiss what some of that does when they're able to go in and, you know, maybe the Angels underestimated them. And then the Royals got through two games and they come in, you know, and even in that game in Kansas City, game three, you know, Trout hit that home run early, but then right away they, you know, Gordon unloads the bases, Royals take the lead. CJ Wilson's already run out of the game. At that point that's like the Angels running for the beach, trying to get away, you know, and just a couple innings later, Hosmer hits the home run, makes it 5-1. At that point, everybody in the stadium knew that they weren't coming back. It was done. It was done. You know, yeah. The Angels had pretty much called it in. They were just kind of hoping that one of their relievers would be able to hold them off. And the Royals just kept putting it on. And a lot of that momentum, even after a break, kind of went to Baltimore too. We talked last week about being able to, you know, avoid the strikeout, put the bat on the ball, get the ball in play, and see what happens. And you look at a Baltimore message board and some of the comments from them on Twitter, and they're just frustrated to no end from some of the bloops and some of the things that have gotten through. You know, Eric Hosmer hit that little blooper on Saturday that scored two in the first inning, and that really kind of got the Royals going right away. That Friday game where Alex Gordon hit that broken bat, bases loaded double that just kind of seemed to drop, you know, from who knows, it was in the air for like an hour and just dropped in the middle of nowhere, and three runs score.
And the right fielder was still like,
yeah,
half a city away. And where the hell was he playing?
Yeah, and stuff like that where it's like, okay, there's things you can't, that you know, it's a little bit of luck. You know, that's why you look at things like BABIP.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, the Royals' approach all year and their philosophy has been, you know, try not to strike out. And when you put the ball in play, you're giving the defense opportunities to not make the play or for the ball to find a hole or something like that. So it's kind of interesting to see that play out. And even though, you know, the Royals, that first game against Oakland, they stole seven bases, and that was immediately what the narrative was going to be. You know, every single thing was mentioning that they stole seven bases against Oakland. Well, shoot, in the divisional series, I mean, they stole five bases, and that's, you know, that's a good amount in three games. But really, two of those are Terrence Gore, who that's all he's going to do. Gerard Dyson didn't steal a base in there, and he's the guy that the Orioles are spooked about. You know, Dyson only has one steal in the entire postseason, but the Orioles are going out of their way. They're putting different shifts on. They're doing that weird pickoff play with Steve Pierce where he's like dancing off the bag and trying to like cut down the distance on a pickoff and trying to make Dyson flinch and things like that. And they're doing so much just to hold off this one aspect of the Royals offense. And it's just like that's what the Royals have done all year. And so other teams are kind of paying attention to it. And so then the Royals just go out and they're hitting the ball. And like, I think it was yesterday or Saturday where, you know, Pierce was kind of playing off because they were trying to hold Dyson at second, and that's how that double gets through by Escobar. And so it's all these things kind of adding up into this idea that, okay, the Royals are going to be a speed team, so we've got to play to that, and it just creates other things in other spots. And so, you know, in the short term, you know, in small sizes, it's working really, really well. Because they're able to get the bat on the ball. They're getting contributions from a lot of different guys. There's not like one person who's totally carrying them, though Lorenzo Cain is trying his damnedest in this series. He seems to be all over the field. But
God, he's amazing, isn't he?
Yeah, but it's also little things. Like, I mean, you look at the format for this, and I was just looking at stats. You know, if you look at just the championship series right now through two games, James Shields has 5 innings, but Wade Davis has thrown 3. You know, so you're able to really leverage some of those guys that you want to get in the game. Wade Davis, Kelvin Herrera, Greg Holland, Brandon Finnegan, those are the only guys out of the bullpen so far. You know, because you get 4 days before this series starts. You get an off day to travel to Kansas City. They get another off day today. So all of those guys are going to be available pretty much every day if you need them. And the same with anybody on offense. I mean, you can set every single guy that you want everywhere. And you're basically, all your options are available.
And that's what and that's part of what we've always talked about, how this team might be built for the playoffs. Because like, if you look at that stat that you just said, Mike, where Wade Davis has 3 innings, you know, they've only played 19 18 in the championship series. So yeah, that's 16% of the total innings have been pitched by Wade Davis. Whereas if you look over the course of a season, like, we know how much value Wade Davis can provide in a one inning format. Mm-hmm. So if you look at, you know, having that value provided over 16% of a series versus, and it probably won't be that for the whole series, but for the sake of this example, you know, that 16% now versus over the course of a season, he's pitching maybe 60, maybe 70 innings out of 1500. So you're not even close to 16%,
right?
You know, so that's part of exactly what you're talking about. I just wanted to kind of throw some numbers to illustrate. That's a really good point that you brought up. And
And just in this series, I mean, it's 10.2 innings, you know, 10 innings, 2 outs among the two starters. And it's 8.1 of those 4 relievers. And even Finnegan, you know, he only got 1 out. He gave up some bloop hits and kind of had some bad luck. But you got 8 innings out of Wade Davis, Kelvin Herrera, and Greg Holland. I mean, that's an entire start. You know, that's
– yeah.
And when you're talking about, you know, 19 total innings and you're getting 8 of them from those 3, you know, you just look at what Wade Davis did on Friday, where he came in 2-3-4 and he struck out all those guys on 11 pitches. That's these guys can do. So – that's a huge advantage for the Royals to be able to just
absolutely
throw those guys out in a large percentage of a game. I mean, they can feasibly pitch a third of a game every day, or even, you know, if they're going to go 2 innings, they can pitch 4 out of 9 innings every day. That's huge. That's, you know, just an immense advantage for the Royals in this kind of a setting.
Yeah. And if there's one thing that's impressed me the most about this team, it's that there have been multiple moments in this postseason where Royals teams of previous years would have imploded and just fell apart, thrown up the flag, and made plans for the offseason. You know, if you would have looked at the 2012 team or maybe even the 2013 team, but definitely anything before 2012 – you know, and they get down 7-3 to the Oakland A's with John Lester on the mound, the Royal Killer, you know, up there with a 4-run lead in the 8th inning. I mean, how many teams in general this year in Major League Baseball wouldn't have just packed it in, but let alone, you know, Royals teams of the past. And they did not give up. They come back and win the game in exciting fashion, we all know. And then, you know, there have been a couple other moments too, like you mentioned Mike Trout leading off the not the game, he was the second hitter of that game, but, you know, he was the first run in the first inning, gets a home run right off the bat after with 1 out, boom, Mike Trout unloads, 1-0 right off the bat, and this is game 3, the clincher. So that doesn't, you know, so many Royals teams in the past, like, I'm waiting for it. I'm expecting the Royals to just kind of put their tail between their legs and succumb to the mighty, you know, Mike Trout and bigger names of the world, and what do you know, Alex Gordon, 3-run double in the bottom of that inning, and they never looked back. And then it happened again in Baltimore, the first game of that series. The Royals go up, I think it was 5-1,
yeah,
they were up. And then the Orioles get some of the luck that the Royals have been getting. They had a freaking infield bloop single that you know goes over. This is one of the ones you were talking about with Finnegan.
Yeah,
where it just kind of goes over his head, and he wasn't sure if he should go for it and pull back, and then Escobar couldn't get there in time, and Fonte couldn't get there, and it just dropped in between the pitcher's mound and second base, and a bloop single.
The only reason that anybody scored was because they had picked off John Scope, but the throw from Escobar to Moustakas hit him in the back.
Yep. So he was able to be safe. It was a snap throw from...
Yeah, he was dead to rights. So, yeah, absolutely. Sal, as you were saying, as I'll finish your sentence, his snap throw from Sal down to second. And yeah, it just happened to hit him in the back. And just... you know, just a crazy couple of events that come through. And that's one of those things where first game of the series seems like maybe the luck's run out. And then later the Royals loaded the bases and scored nothing. And there's also that inning where Dyson had that, he got caught stealing. Looked like maybe he was pushed off the bag. I don't know. Tough to tell. His momentum was carrying him pretty hard. But then the next two batters, Lorenzo Cain and Billy Butler, struck out on pretty bad called strike threes. And that could have been another moment where the Royals just kind of, you know, okay, well, nothing's going our way. But it didn't, you know, they ended up scoring later. And even in that, I think, 10th inning, it was the crazy, you know, Alex Gordon hits a home run. That's not terribly surprising. But then Sal Perez walks. That's surprising. He's walked maybe 2-3 times since June. And then Mike Moustakas hits a home run off a lefty. So, and that was the difference in the game. A lot of weird stuff and a lot of things where the Royals are just coming up big. I mean, how many of those home runs are put in extra innings? 3 or 4? It's just crazy. Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I've gone through these weird periods where it's like I'll be like terrified of playing because it's like, well, crap, what if the Royals lose game 3 against Baltimore, and then, you know, then the pressure's on them that they have to get to 3-1, and then it's 2-2, and then Baltimore now has moment, you know, worst case scenario kind of stuff. And then I start thinking, you know, the math on this is very much in the Royals' favor. I think they're like 80% to win this series by projections, which is mind-boggling considering can't recognize it. But, you know, teams that lose the first two games at home in the LCS have never gone on to win it. So, you know, history's on their side. Math is on their side. They've just got to win 2 out of 3 at home and keep from going back to Baltimore. And they're in the World Series. It is just so crazy.
Which is unfathomable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's awesome. It's so awesome.
It is awesome
to be totally right now. Awesome. And it's, I mean, never could have predicted this. And yeah, it's, I think one of the things working in their favor, and you alluded to this a little bit earlier, is I think the fact that they are the Royals is helping them out right now, because I feel like, and I definitely felt this from the Angels, but I feel like the Angels took the field and they said, it's the Royals. Okay, good job making the playoffs, but, you know, put on your big boy pants and we're gonna smoke you guys. And they didn't. And so I think the Orioles maybe took them a little bit more seriously, but I think that's something that I got to imagine, if you're a player and your entire life, your entire career, the Royals have just been this joke of a franchise who has just been the laughingstock of baseball. You know, I don't care how good they are. It's got to be hard to overcome that mental aspect of and thought of, okay, Royals are on the schedule, this is an automatic win, because it's been that way for so long. And I honestly think that's working in their favor, especially when you have a lot of veterans around. Like the biggest thing with the Angels series I noticed from a body language perspective was Albert Pujols. Like his body language was so bad, I thought, you know, especially when I was at game 3 and I could watch him in person as he ran out in between innings into first base and everything. I mean, maybe he's always been like that and I just haven't noticed it, but it looked really... he looked kind of almost shell-shocked, like what is going on here? And he's just destroyed the Royals his entire career. So,
yeah.
You know, for especially for someone like him, people would be like, what's happening? You know, I mean, I think there's some legitimacy to that. And I know even if the Royals make it to the World Series, I still think it's going to be hard for teams to take them as seriously as you would the Yankees or somebody. And I think that's good for the Royals, because you don't want to be in a position where people are scared of the Yankees just because they're the Yankees, you know, so you want your team to have confidence, but there's also a much greater risk of a possible kind of letdown from that, because you're not as focused, you're not as keyed into the game, because you're just like, oh, you know, automatic win, we've got this World Series locked up, you know. And if the Royals could face, if they make the World Series, the Giants or the Cardinals, so I don't necessarily know that. I don't think the Giants would think that way, just because I think their organization is run a little differently, and this seems to be how they kind of operate on that different wavelength. But I could see the Cardinals, the way they've kind of dominated the Royals, you know, both on the field and off in the local scene. I could easily see them come in just overconfident, and God, how just unbelievably insufferable those fans would be leading up to that World Series. But that is a conversation for a different day. But I do think that it definitely,
or maybe not, depending on your perspective. I don't really want to. That would be the most nerve-wracking week of my life, probably, if they had to play the Cardinals in the World Series, just because their fans are so just insufferable. It's the perfect word for them. It's just they're so, I don't even know. I don't know the right word. Probably shouldn't find the right word, actually.
Yeah, the only thing worse than Cardinals fans, and the only thing worse than Cardinals fans who just won a World Series, are Cardinals fans who had just won a World Series over the Royals. I don't know if I could take it. Yeah. So,
but well, I mean, if you think about how long it's taken them to get over 1985, I mean, they still bring that up.
I know.
So if they won,
they won two since then.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I'm just looking at the some of the players who have made it in. You know, I'm probably missing some obvious guys, but it seems like there's only like four guys who might have playoff experience on the Royals roster who have seen, you know, playoff experience now. So, I mean, that has to factor into it too, when you've got the Cardinals who have been to four LCS, you know, NLCS series, and that's redundant. And the Giants who seem to win every other 2 years, and even the Orioles who've been in the playoffs a few times recently, and the Royals are this team that nobody's been there, and it's almost like they just don't know that they're supposed to get beat, and so they don't.
Yeah,
it's like they're clueless. I sent this to you guys in an email earlier today. It's like Brandon Finnegan kind of encompasses that, because this guy was drafted in June, was pitching in the College World Series, you know, just a couple months ago, and now he's in, you know, some big time playoff action, and he's performed pretty well. And it's like he doesn't realize that he's supposed to be overwhelmed here, and the Royals are doing the exact same kind of thing. And you know, considering how they've handled pressure last year and this year, that is really exciting, and that's what makes me optimistic against that, you know, that worst case scenario that still props up. You know, until this is all over, that's still going to be there. You know, they could be up 3-0 in game four of the World, you know, 3-0 in game four of the World Series, and have a you know, 10-run lead. I'd still think, well, hold on.
Yeah,
till that last out, we're not there yet. And so,
yep.
I don't know. I mean, it's fun.
It absolutely is. And it's interesting that the Royals would never have home field advantage until the World Series. And God bless Bud Selig and making the All-Star game count, because that's the only reason that the Royals would ever have home field advantage. And they would have it for the World Series, which is unbelievable to think. That's funny. But, oh, man, it's almost getting to that point where it's hard to come up with words. I mean, I made this comment on Twitter the other night that if it's almost, I don't know if players realize how special it is what they're doing, or if they're just kind of not thinking and just going out and just playing, which is probably what's happening, and hopefully they keep doing that. But like the idea that, you know, especially as the Royals, you very well may never get there again, you know? So, if that were to be the case, and it would be another 29 years or something, God, please don't let that happen. But
right.
If that's how it was, it seems like everybody on the team is getting their money's worth, so to speak. I mean, even the players who are struggling have contributed. And Fonte has an RBI, and had a big one in, when did he get that? Was that the first game of the Angel series that he got an RBI? Infante?
When was was that? I don't remember. I should. It's only been six games. Should be able to remember them, but I don't. You know.
Maybe it was one of the rallies in the A's game in the wild card. But Escobar hit a home run. Lorenzo Cain is, he's gunning for World Series MVP right now, and he's got my vote right now, even over Eric Hosmer, for MVP of the playoffs so far for the Royals. And Alex Gordon has struggled a lot, like we said, but he's had some of the biggest hits of the playoffs. He's hit a home run. Mike Moustakas had, by all accounts, a bad offensive.
Four home runs.
What?
He has four home runs.
A terrible offensive season, and he's tied right now for the most home runs by a Royals player in a single postseason, and it's only been six games. So he's, of course, tied with former guest of the Kansas City Baseball Vault, friend of the show, if you will, Willie Mays Akins, who hit all four of his in the World Series, which we talked about when he was on the show. But, that's incredible. Mike Moustakas, and then Eric Hosmer's hit three home runs. And
two.
Is it three or two? It's two. Okay. Two. But then he had the big double or triple that off those nearly a home run off the wall.
Yep.
That was big in the A's game. Everybody is contributing. Salvador Perez has, like we said, he struggled a lot, but he hit the walk-off game winner in the wild card game. I mean, everybody has a highlight that they can look to where if they don't make it back for some reason, God forbid, but if that were to happen, they can look back at this playoffs and say, look at what I did. I made this happen here. And it's just fun to watch. I mean, it's incredible.
It's, yeah, well, everybody but Jason Nix. He didn't have a highlight.
Besides Jason, all the starters, we'll put it that way.
Right, right. And even
some of the non-starters.
Even guys like Christian Colon, who had that one. Dyson
had the swinging bunt. Mm-hmm. Dyson had the big defensive play in the outfield. Terrence Gore, obviously, stealing bases.
Yeah.
So, and Jerod Dyson basically had the galvanizing moment of the postseason, stealing third and doing the rev it up dance, whatever the hell it is that I don't know what he calls it, but it was a pretty sweet looking dance. And I've got that GIF saved on my computer, so I can drop that when need be.
Well, I've got the Billy Butler one saved, which we didn't even bring that up. Billy Butler
even
stole
better.
A base in that Angels
Billy
game.
Billy Butler stole a base,
and that was that's when right. you knew that it was done. Like they, you know,
yeah, it was
that's
over
just right, like yeah. okay, when Billy Butler's stealing bases on you, just end it right there. So. Yeah, I don't need it. It's just, it's crazy. I wish they were playing tonight, but, they're not. It's okay.
I know.
They'll get through.
But we'll be out there tomorrow. And if anything, this works in the Rose advantage because they, like you said, they have used a lot of their bullpen, so now they get an extra day of rest for their bullpen. So everybody is going to be extra fresh tomorrow because they already had the day off yesterday. So, yep. Now let's look forward now and say, okay, we've got, at a maximum, five games left against the Orioles. They only have to win two to move on to the World Freaking Series. And who Guthrie starting game three, right? He's still the starter?
Yep.
So he'll be starting tomorrow. And then is it Wei-Yin Chen for the Orioles, right?
Yep, he's still going to be game four.
Still
going to
be the starter.
I think they're both kind of looking to see what happens tomorrow to name game four, because it could be Shields or it could be Vargas for the Royals. I would almost say for the Orioles, they could probably throw Chris Tillman again, because it would have been regular rest like with Shields. But I don't know. They're going to be in a spot where they're either 2-1 or they're 3-0, and it's going to be pretty close to a must win. If they throw Tillman, it's kind of a pivotal game, because if they were two games to one and they're Tillman against, say, Vargas, I don't know. That could be one they could sneak away with. But I also think if it's two, I don't know. There's so many different ways. I think the Royals win, and Dave Lasky brought this up too, and I think Rob Nyer as well. The more I think about it, it makes perfect sense. If they win, they'll probably go with Vargas, just because, okay, if you can get away with Vargas in game four with a 3-0 series lead, get James Shields some extra rest. Why not? He seems like he's kind of getting tired. But if it does get to 2-1 and you really need to get it to 3-1 and keep it in that spot, then, you go with James Shields. So, I don't even know. Baltimore could go with like I think Miguel Gonzalez is a name that I saw as a projected guy for game four, but I would bet it's probably going to be Chris Tillman in game four, no matter what happens in game three.
Yeah, no, and I was just gonna say that we had an interesting discussion on the email chain today about that, and you pretty much hit all the pertinent points. But and I'm down with that logic. If you have a 3-0 game lead, try and sneak a Vargas victory in there. And I mean, he pitched well against the Angels and ended up winning the game, and that was on the road. So I mean, if he's in the confines of Kauffman Stadium, give him a go, and then worst case scenario, he gets shelled. You lose your first game of the postseason, and you're down 3-1. You've still got another game at home to try and clinch, and you can throw James Shields out there. And then even if that didn't happen, you'd still have a 3-2 lead, and then you'd have Yordano Ventura taking the mound the next day. So, I mean, I'm definitely down with that logic, and I'm cool with that. So. It'll be interesting to see what they do. It'll be more interesting to see what the Orioles do, especially if they're down 3-0.
Yeah, and I don't know if they're three if they're down 3-0. I mean, I'm comfortable saying that that would be it, but again, until till it
Yeah, I
happens.
mean, the only time I can think of anything is when in 04, I think it was, the Red Sox came back from 3-0 to beat the Yankees, but I mean, that was quite literally a once in a lifetime thing. So,
Yeah, I think that's
if
the only
the
time I've seen it.
Royals, yeah, in I mean, it's only happened a handful of times in all of professional sports in any given 7-game series. So, I'd be pretty comfortable and or I'd be feeling pretty good, put it that way, if they were up 3-0. But again, like you said, ain't over till it's over. So I don't know. I wouldn't start celebrating or popping any corks or anything, but. It's man, this is some sort of special run, and it's really feeling like that. And regardless of what these Royals do, if they make it out of the ALCS or not, or win the World Series, lose the World Series, whatever, I mean, they've accomplished a lot. And it is, I mean, I am in no way one of those like just happy to be this far type of modes. Like, I want to win this all desperately, but just trying to put it into perspective, it'll be nice to have some memories, some things to talk about beyond 1985.
Yeah.
Oh, I
Yeah.
think the best sign that I saw was either at the wild card game. No, it was at the game where they clinched the DS against the Angels. Somebody was wearing a vintage 1985 Royals World Series champion sweatshirt and had a sign that said, "I want a new sweatshirt." I was like, that is freaking great. That was so perfect. And I mean, it's legit and it's true. And I'm glad we've got stuff to talk about now. And any sort of, hype up postseason montages for the next 5 to 10 years,
Yeah.
they're gonna have at least two or three different clips from this Royals run, regardless of how far the Royals go. Because and if what makes Major League playoffs so great is basically everything the Royals have done so far in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're special moments. I mean, you think like 91 when Francisco Cabrera hits that single that ends up winning the game for the Braves, where Sid Bream somehow scores from second. That's a memorable thing. You get the Kirby
The
Puckett
Jeter
catch and
backhand
steal.
toss.
Yeah, I mean, it's just all these different moments. The 2011 series, the Rangers and Cardinals, just so many different things that become, they're put in those montages, and they're in there for a reason, because you want to point out, okay, these are the exciting big pivotal moments. Where the biggest things happen. Joe Carter's home run in 93, so many different things in with the Yankees dynasty are going to get featured. So you get things like the Royals hitting home runs and all these different saves, and it's just I don't even know. It's so weird to be this deep into October and having relevant and exciting baseball to talk about. And who knows? I mean, usually this time we're looking at next year, and I think you can a little bit,
Yeah.
but God dang, I mean, I don't really, who cares? I don't want to get
Yeah, I'm
to
not.
2015 yet. We're not done with 2014.
Absolutely. Not even close to done with 2014 yet. And I was thinking, is this this will be Jeremy Guthrie's first start for this postseason, but it's his first ever, isn't it?
Yeah.
Postseason start.
Yeah.
Yeah. He hasn't. I mean, it's so funny. As well as the Royals are playing, I mean, not even just the young guys, so many people on this team just haven't made the playoffs. You know, like Jason Vargas, he was on the Angels last year and they didn't make the playoffs and they were the best team in baseball this year. And was he on the Angels last year, or am I mixing that up?
Yeah, he was on the Angels.
He was? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Jeremy Guthrie was on the Orioles for a while, and the Orioles made it in 2012, but he was over here, and he had been traded to Colorado, and then you know, he was over in KC at that time. By that time, and it's so crazy that so many of these people, I mean, the only people on the roster who have playoff experience, James Shields, Wade Davis, Omar Infante, right? I mean, I don't think anybody else.
Has Jason Frazier? Nix,
did he?
Oh, Nix might
have. Frazier, was he on the right?
I don't remember.
I guess Raul Ibanez has experience, but he's not even on the roster, so he didn't really count.
Right, yeah. I mean, those are just
on the ALCS roster, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, some of those guys like Nix might, but even if he did, I mean, he's not going to be on the World Series roster if the Royals make it. So it's like he's going to have his one at bat in the wild card game. That's about it. So
yeah. I mean, if you look at, if you just go around the field, you know, Alex Gordon, of course not. Lorenzo Cain, no. You know, he and Alcides Escobar were in the Brewers farm system when they made the playoffs, but not on the actual team. Nori Aoki, what was he? Did he make the playoffs with the Brewers? Did the Brewers make it in 2012?
No, they made it in 2011.
2011, okay.
Yeah, because they made it the year after the Greinke trade.
Yeah, because they made it to the ALC or the NLCS, didn't they?
Yes.
Or was it just the DS?
I think they did, yes.
They did, okay.
Lost to the Cardinals.
But anyway.
Or maybe it was just the divisional series and they lost to the Cardinals. Anyway, yeah. I just remember they didn't hit any home runs in that series. And they'd hit like a million in the regular season. So.
Yeah. And it's funny because I was thinking in the A's game. When the Rose made their comeback, and it was actually it wasn't during that game. It was at the beginning of the Angels game, when the Royals had tied it up at 2-2, and the Angels had hit like two home runs, I think, to get their two runs, and the Royals kind of scratched and clawed like they do to get their two. And I was thinking, I was like, man, what if the Royals were to somehow win the World Series but never hit a home run? Like, has there been any team that's done that? That's won a World Series and not hit a home run?
Maybe
but I mean, that's obviously out the window now. Yeah, exactly. But obviously now, I mean, the Royals are the most home runs in all the playoffs. So, I mean, that's out the window. But and shortly after I had that thought was when Mike Moustakas blasted his game winner. So
good timing.
Yeah, it's just a postseason of confounded expectations, which is a good thing. And I don't know. I mean, I'm on the edge of my seat here. It's a lot of fun. It's just awesome.
It's going to be one of those deals that sticks around for a while. Like, even if they, you know, even if they do make it to the World Series and they lose, it's a huge success of a season. It's just
absolutely
immense. I mean, you're winning, you look at all those guys, you know, fans in Western Kansas or Oklahoma or Iowa or Nebraska, or, you know, even into mid-central Missouri or southern Missouri or Arkansas, you know, a lot of those fans who have ventured off to be Cubs fans or Rockies fans or Rangers fans or Cardinals fans, some of them probably coming back. You know, there was some kind of poll that at the beginning of the season, like 48% of people in Kansas identified as Royals fans. And recently that poll, they're at like 70%, which is kind of fickle. I'm sure they're bandwagon or even fair weather, but whatever, they're here now, you know, and winning will sustain those kinds of things. You know, you look around, even like I'm in Lawrence, I'm not even in Kansas City, and there's tons of Royals gear that people are wearing here. You know, all the time. Like, I see it all the time. I work on campus. I see students wearing Royals gear all the time. And we just had late night you know. So it's KU basketball season. People are wearing Royals stuff, and you hardly see it anyway. But to see it like right now is just unheard of. So, you know, people are excited, and you know, that's something where the attendance was its highest since 91 this year. That I think it's going to, they're probably going to cross 2 million in attendance next year. According to, I think Mellinger said that, quoted that in a column, that they expect to be at like 2.1 million in attendance. You know, how many people have bought season tickets for next year based on just getting priority for playoff tickets? So, you know, that's just going to help next year too, where you're going to have a lot of people who are Royals fans and invested, and you know, the team's probably going to look pretty different, but they've still got a lot of young talent. It's not going to be completely overhauled into anything. They're going to try to build on the success of this year, either through free agency or other trades, or you know, just their own natural development. You know, what if someone like Moustakas and Hosmer, what if this is their breakout? What if this is spurs them on into something else? Maybe it is. I don't know. It could be something that they build on next year. Maybe it's a fluke. I don't know. But, you know, you've seen them do it now on a big stage. And so the expectation can be that, okay, you can do this again in the regular season. And if that happens, well, shoot, you know, this team might have something going next year.
And we've talked about on this show how, you know, if the Royals are good, then this town will support and the town will come alive for Royals love. And we have, as fans, put our money where our mouth is, you know, the, like you said, highest attendance since 91. And beyond that, just, you know, just like you said, it's been so crazy. I'm walking out of the store a little over a week ago before the start of the Angels series. And somebody honks their horn at me. I'm like, do I know somebody? Is somebody telling me to get out of the way? I was just on the sidewalk. And some guy just points at me because I was wearing my Royals jersey because it was right before the game. And, you know, just honked and gave me like the thumbs up type of thing just for wearing a Royals gear. Like, when was the last time that happened? You know, it's the city has really embraced it. And yeah, you know, maybe there's some bandwagon fans, but maybe I'm alone. And I don't think I'm alone, but maybe I'm in the minority. I don't care if you're bandwagon, whatever, like the more the merrier. Let's get out. Let's everybody have fun. Root for the Royals. I hate to, I'm never one to be like, you know, a lot of people make kind of try and go against the sabermetric movement by saying stuff like bringing up, you know, average Joe fan and all that kind of stuff. And like, I don't want to try and draw a dichotomy between fans. You know, everybody can be a fan in their own way. Like, obviously I can try and educate people who want to learn if I know something that they don't and vice versa. But at the same time, you know, and this is a kind of devolving into a completely different discussion, but ultimately the point is, you know, it's awesome to see so many people. And I don't care if they started the season not huge Royals fans. Like, I think it's great. And it's so much fun to be out there at a packed house at Kauffman. You know, Mike and I will be out there tomorrow rooting the team on. It's so fun to be in bars watching the game, just walking around. Everybody's wearing Royals hats. Freaking Chiefs are playing. When was the last time you heard somebody talk about the Chiefs?
Yeah.
I mean, before last week, the Chiefs, you know, had a tough loss last week, but they've actually, after a slow start, they've been playing pretty well. And, I mean, nobody's talking about them. They had a huge win that Monday night before the Royals won the wild card game. People just aren't really talking about them. You don't see them as much Chiefs gear running around. Even Red Friday, people are wearing, you know, red with, you know, a little bit of blue on top. You know, it's the Royals are really just kind of taking this town by storm. And I was really hoping they could squeeze into that 2 million fan mark this year, and they came pretty close. But I mean, it's absolutely great to see, you know, so many fans. And if they have 2 million next year, I mean, that, you know, if David Glass needs evidence to pour money into a team, you know, highest payroll ever, hey, guess what? Playoffs, league championship series, and you know, most fans in, you know, over two decades, and, you know, probably in highest increase year over year in season ticket prices in a long time, or season ticket purchases in a long time. So, and prices too, probably.
Right.
But, I mean, it's, you know, if the proof is in the pudding, as they say. So if David Glass is questioning whether he should spend more money next year, or at least spend the same amount of money, I mean, I think his question has been answered. And if he were to cut back and say it's because, you know, budget and all that kind of stuff, then I think he would deserve some vitriol. But I don't know if he'll do that or not. So we'll obviously wait until that's another discussion. But to your point of even if they make the World Series and lose, I mean, if they do, that's another flag, though. That's a permanent, you know, right now you look out in left field and you see, 1985 World Series flag at the top, right below that, 1980 American League pennant. So this would go right there in between those two. Even if they didn't win the World Series, if they won the ALCS and win the pennant, it'd be 2014 American League champions. And as we know, flags fly forever. So, I mean, that's still, you know, unbelievable. Again, don't want to be in that happy to be here mode because I desperately want them to win the whole thing.
Yep.
But just to, again, put some perspective, like Mike just did, it's still something that if they can, you know, get past the ALCS and go to the World Series, it's just been one unbelievable season.
Yeah. I mean, if they do that, I mean, they swept the Giants and they beat the Cardinals 3-1 in season series. So, you know, while those two teams could possibly be called better than the Royals over the course of the season, you know, when they played this year, Royals beat them. And the Giants series, it wasn't even close. And the Giants are playing better now than they were then. But still,
right,
they beat them, you know. They'd have to face Madison Bumgarner, which I think they missed him in Kansas City. But, okay, so that's one game. You know, they can beat them in the others. So, it's in the Cardinals. Cardinals are beatable. I mean, their bullpen's not that great.
Cardinals are the Cardinals.
Yeah, you just – they're hitting home runs, too. If they stop hitting home runs, who knows? I don't know. It's bizarro. It's so weird, but it's awesome. It's the coolest thing.
Absolutely.
And this is the kind of the cool part about like baseball's postseason. Like with basketball, like it goes on forever. Like the NBA, I can't even pay attention to it. It's just like it's like 3 months of season, 2 months of playoffs. Which maybe that's what baseball needs to get this variance out. But I don't know. I mean, there's something kind of, I don't know, special, magical in it, something like that. With, you know, the NFL, it's 1 week, and then you wait a week, you get your thing. It's kind of the same setup as the rest of the season. It's not really, you know, okay, fine, here we're going to do another game, and then there's a lot of time off. Even with, like, the NCAA, you know, you get that first weekend, and then it kind of gets a little more serious the next weekend, but it's like game day, off day, game day. Then a week off. But with baseball, it's like, okay, you got two games and travel day, and then two games and then travel day. And then it's always like, there's always like some anticipation, and there's always a lot of things to talk about. And there's always, you know, all different storylines that pop up, real or manufactured or what have you. And that's kind of what makes it pretty cool to just kind of see teams go on a run like this. And, you know, the Royals, they've won every playoff game they played, and, you know, they pretty decent odds to win the next two in Kansas City with pitchers who are built for Kauffman Stadium, especially a cold Kauffman Stadium where the ball's probably not going to carry that much. Yeah, it's within the realm of possibilities that they sweep this and then get to wait out the other guys and see what happens in the World Series. And it's all...
And then you start talking about, has anybody ever been undefeated in the playoffs?
They're probably not since they've done divisions, but I bet there's some teams in LCS.
Yeah, back when it was just the winners of each league playing each other in the World Series, you know, I guess that would be undefeated. Be so, there, but yeah, I guess I should say in the modern era of not even the two wild cards, just the one wild card even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if anybody has. So, I know the Rockies won every game up until the World Series, and then they got swept.
Yes.
But that was also 04, and that was – or was that 04? That was 07.
07.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because 04 was the Cardinals losing. Go Red Sox.
Yes. And funny that and I think if the Royals were to win the World Series, I think I'd be right in saying that they would have more playoff victories in one season than any team ever, since they had to win that wild card game as well. I don't know if there's been a one-game wild card winner yet that's won the World Series, has there?
I don't believe there has been.
I mean, the only thing I could think of would be the 20, because it's only, was it 2011 that first came in, 2012?
It's, yeah, it was 2012, 2013.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe the Giants in 2012. I didn't think that they were the wild card team, but maybe. I don't know. So,
and who knows if the Giants were the wild card team.
Yeah, and the Giants were the wild card team this year. So if they were to win and the Royals were to win, then basically whoever would win the World Series would have that title of most playoff wins ever in a season because of the wild card, and would be the first of the one game wild card winner. So
cool figure.
Crazy stuff. I mean, I think with that, we're kind of all talked out. So we've got, we're recording this, on Monday, October 13th again. And tomorrow, Mike and I will both be out at the game. So if you can get out to the game, get out there. If you can't, cheer them on for wherever you are, you know, keep them going in town. I mean, we've got, it's just been so great. Mike, any final thoughts here?
Oh geez, no.
too many for just, this segment.
Yeah, just too many for closing. I mean, it's everything all at once. It's crazy. It's, you know, just unbridled hope and sheer terror all at once. It's Royals baseball and right loving, now.
Loving every second of it. So hopefully we'll be back next week with maybe a sweep or an ALCS victory either way to talk about. And I'm not sure when the first World Series game is scheduled. Maybe it would have been a career, probably be just coming up by then. But so hopefully we'll see you next week and have some of that World Series preview perhaps to talk about. So for Michael Engel and myself, Jeff Herr, this is the Kansas City Baseball Vault brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for stopping by. And of course, as always, go Royals.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. Talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.